Hey everybody, thanks for listening to this episode of My First Sketch at MyFirstSketch.com. I'm Josh Hyam. Any questions, thoughts, recommendations, feel free to email me at josh@myfirstsketch.com. I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Like the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/myfirstsketch. And it'd be really cool if you rate it 5 stars and leave a review wherever you get the podcast. So submissions for the live portion of Philly Sketch Fest have now closed. You can still submit your short films and videos at phillysketchfest.com/film2024. The jury will be pouring over the live submissions over the next couple weeks, and we'll have a full schedule later this month. So keep an eye on phillysketchfest.com and all the social media for the updates. Cutthroat Sketch returns to Salabona Thursday, April 4th, with the theme Ring by Spring. I'm going a little wild with the sabotages on this one. I'll say there are more sabotages planned for this show than ever before. It's going to be fun. Tickets are $12 and available at cutthroatsketch.com/tickets. But we turn our focus to our friends in St. John's, Newfoundland, and Labrador. NL Sketchfest starts today, if you're listening when this was released, and runs April 3rd through April 7th. A number of friends of the podcast are performing, like Bad Medicine, Cam Wiley, Big Chick Energy, and Tita Collective. You can follow the festival on Instagram at NL Sketchfest. Today's guest is Jana Gillis, currently based in St. John's, Newfoundland, and Labrador. Jana will be performing at NL Sketchfest in St. John's on Sunday, April 7th in the 7 p.m. block, along with 4 idiots. Jana's first sketch is called Blazer Lady. Jana plays the titular Blazer Lady, and I read all the other characters that interact where they're just one in, one out, one in, one out. So let's get to the sketch. Jana and Grace enter.
You're always so successful, sis. You have all the answers. And a Starbucks gold card. What's your secret?
Just fake it till you make it.
I don't know where to start.
Well, I wear this blazer. It's my power blazer. And I put it on and I feel like a gosh darn superhero.
Well, Jesus, what practical advice.
Here, just try it on. I have to go to work. Grace hands the blazer to Jana and Grace exits. Jana puts on the power blazer and magic. Sound cue of the Zelda treasure chest opening.
Wow, I feel like a gosh darn superhero.
Jana exits momentarily as Surf Quinn enters, lost on the other side of the stage. Enter Jana again. Hey, miss, nice blazer. You look like a successful person with your life together. Can you help me? I'm lost. I ran out of data and I can't open my maps app.
Where are you trying to go?
The CN Tower.
Oh, just look up.
Wow. Thanks, Blazer Lady. Jana likes the sound of that. Exit Quinn as Bradley enters on the other side of the stage. Help! Wow, nice blazer. You look professional. My cat's stuck up in a tree.
Are you sure she's stuck?
I think she's just chilling. Wow, thanks, Blazer Lady. You're a lifesaver. Exit Bradley as Sam enters on the other side of the stage. Blazer Lady, my car broke down. What do I do?
Do you have CAA?
Oh, yeah!
Call him.
Wow, thanks, Blazer Lady. What problem can't you handle? Sam exits as Nicole enters on the other side of the stage. Wow, what a nice purse I have. Enter Grant to steal her purse. Help, Blazer Lady! This man's stealing my purse! Grant is terrified when faced with Blazer Lady.
Oh no! A powerful, confident woman!
Grant drops the purse and runs away. Jana returns the purse to Nicole. Wow, thanks, Blazer Lady. You're a real hero. And oh, so fashionable.
All in a day's work, ma'am.
Exit Nicole and enter Gabe, Wells, and Luke. They're childlike fangirl types. And they're swarming the Blazer Lady.
Wow, Blazer Lady! We want to be just like you when we grow up.
Enter Ophira.
Blazer Lady, we meet at last.
The children hush.
Who are you?
I'm the mayor, and I'd like to present you with the key to the city.
Ophira gives a key to Jana, and the kids cheer. Kids, do you have any questions for our very own town hero?
Will you sign my action figure? Do you have any fashion and or life tips?
Make good choices.
Okay, kids. I'm sure Blazer Lady has a lot of world saving to do. Come on, back to our boring, mundane lives. Everybody but Wells exits. Blazer Lady? How do I become powerful like you? Where do I start?
It's all about the blazer, kid.
Oh, I don't have a blazer. Jana thinks for a moment and immediately takes her blazer off and hands it to Wells.
Here, you can have mine, blazer kid.
Really? Wells tries to put the blazer on, but nothing works.
The power blazer doesn't fit.
It was never about the blazer. The real power is in you.
Well, thanks, Blazer Lady.
Just call me Lady, kid.
Wells exit and Grace enters back on the other stage of the stage. Sis, I just saw you on the news. Way to go. Wait, where the fuck's my blazer? Lights out.
My name is Samantha Russell. I'm a sketch comedian, and I have a prop and costume hoarding problem. So I figured the best way to get it under control is to start a podcast. On Should I Keep This? I chat with other comedians about their experiences in comedy and our insane prop and costume collections. And on each episode, we both bring a beloved item to discuss whether it's a treasure or just trash. Sometimes it turns out no matter how much money or time we spent on a prop, the only thing we should be holding on to are the memories we've made along the way. So check out Should I Keep This? We have new episodes every 2 weeks, available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, Jana.
This works. Hey.
All right. So tell me about the sketch. Tell me about Blazer Lady.
Blazer Lady, it's not actually my first sketch, but it was the first one I did when I did the Second City Conservatory program. So I just kept rewriting it. Forever.
And that's in Toronto, right? Like,
yeah, in Toronto. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
you're not from Toronto. So did you, or I mean, you're currently not in Toronto. Were you from Toronto, mm-hmm. or did you travel to do this conservatory?
Well, I'm from Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, Canada.
That's nowhere near that's nowhere near Toronto.
It is not. So I grew up doing theater there, and I think I did do like a sketch show when I was in high school with this Class Acts Drama School, it was called, or Drama, because that's how you pronounce that in Cape Breton. And then I went to a theater school in Newfoundland, and that's how I ended up there. And then I moved to Toronto because I was acting and stuff, and I did a writing course at Second City because I didn't know much about it. So I literally emailed them and was like, what can I jump into? I just moved here. So I took the writing one class, and then I heard somebody talking about conservatory just like in the lobby because I was like, you know, brand new in town. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, that sounds cool. So I auditioned for it. But what was really nice is like, I didn't know any of the players in town. I didn't know if people I was like auditioning for, like their importance in the community. Like I didn't know any of that. I was just like, oh, this will be a fun thing to do. And then I got into it. And I was so sure that like, I probably wouldn't get into the conservatory program that like after the audition, I went to the front desk and I was like, hey, if I don't get into this, can I transfer my credit for like improv for actors? And they're like, sure.
so you didn't, you just got right to the conservatory after the one class, like you didn't have to do like a full like levels of stuff? Yeah. Or
well, I have a BFA in acting, so I did a theater school
that let you skip some of their steps, I guess.
Yeah, so it's just like I didn't have all the language of everything, and like my kind of improv background is like a little more eclectic. Like I did it through my after school kind of drama program. So, and the Canadian Improv Games is like a big thing, but
so you were part of that too?
No, they didn't go to Cape Breton. They didn't go to like major centers when I was growing up. So like I missed all of that. But like through theater, I was doing improv. So I'd remember doing like the first conservatory class, and I like didn't know I kept saying miming, and like one of the teachers was like, "Object work, you mean?" And I was like, "Oh, okay, sure." So like I just didn't have all the vocabulary that was like standard. But yeah, I don't know. Improv is,
I guess I never really thought about the idea that like the vocabulary of behind the scenes in theater is different than the vocabulary behind the scenes with like improv and sketch at times like that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of, I mean, in my head,
it's, or if it's like, just a Second City thing, like
I think it's just a regional thing. Like yeah. I have a weird thing that sometimes gets me in trouble, but I just think it's really funny because like there's like a whole style of theater out east of like, songs, skits, and stories, but like skit is a very touchy word for a lot of people. So that's my own little thing. Yeah. But it's like it's just like regional differences.
I'm very much one of those people that like a skit, something that you do around the campfire at Boy Scout camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say, like, I think there was one of the Canadian teams, like in Edmonton, was trying to like take back the word skit, and they were like, "No, we're doing skit comedy. It's fine." Like,
yeah, I think I just people might get mad at me about this, but I just think for like a sketch is such about like satire and kind of commenting on everything. It's like built into kind of the mold of sketch comedy. And to just be like so, I don't know, touchy about the word skit is kind of just personally really funny to me. But I'm coming from a regional place where you use the words interchangeably, and they're not a dig at anything. They're just, I don't know.
I guess we just use the word sketch to make it sound more like professional, maybe, when we're not that much more professional.
Who decided that that is the more professional word? That's, I'm just going to want to flip tables. That's fine.
now I'm curious, like, maybe I should go like looking into that. Like, where did the term sketch comedy versus skit, like where do those two veer off historically?
Yeah.
That's a bit for my comedy nerd brain. we'll get back to that.
I might have made a big fight to try and call it NL Skit Fest, but was turned down by all of the people in charge, which, I mean, fair.
I feel like that would be something to do, like, a one-night thing. Like, do, like, the silliest thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, so you mentioned that, you know, doing theater growing up and getting a BFA in theater. Well, let's talk about comedy. Do you have like an earliest memory of comedy?
I don't know. I always just, it was just fun for me. It was always the fun. So I started after school drama classes. I was 5 years old, so I don't know how cognitively I knew what was happening. But I've been involved in theater and stuff since that age. Yeah, comedy's just kind of been fun for me. And I like always watch like Mr. Bean and stuff with my dad. So yeah. I don't know. I think I don't just do sketch, I do other stuff. I think comedy is a really great tool to talk about things that people are kind of scared to talk about, or that's like less accessible to talk dramatically about. And sometimes it's just fun to laugh.
I think that idea that comedy like is kind of like that spoonful of sugar to like help with some of like the more difficult things, maybe. So growing up, like I always ask this of people that did theater growing up and stuff. Did you have like a favorite role like as a teenager that you did?
I don't know. It all kind of smushes together, but I was Rizzo in my grade 11 musical, and that was kind of when I decided I was like singing their worst things I can do on stage on our cafetorium, I mean a cafetorium, rural high school. And that's when I decided to go to theater school. I was like, fuck it, I'll go to theater school. So that's kind of a important thing. And then I didn't really end up doing musicals. I went to like a classical, more classical theater. But yeah, that sticks out to me.
So it just occurred to me that I totally forgot about the whole idea of the sketch of the show, my first sketches. We didn't talk about the sketch enough yet. Usually I start off with that and then transition into childhood and everything.
You can cut this however you like.
I was just thinking, I was like, oh man, do I have to cut this and like rearrange it or just leave it be with my like absent-mindedness sometimes? All right. So like, all right, let's go back to Second City. You're in Toronto. You take the conservatory class. And I think, did you say this is the first thing that you wrote for the sketch? To rewrite and rewrite. Did you perform it like at the I'm assuming class show at the end?
This is the one that made it into our grad show. And I did have three blackouts in the grad show, which I'm very proud of. But sketch wise, I just kept rewriting the sketch, basically. Yeah, and the nugget of this, the Power Blazer thing, it's actually based on like networking events, because like I work in film and stuff too, and like I would put on my blazer to like go to these like talks and panels and stuff and like at film festivals and just like feel like a professional person. So like that's the nugget of this sketch. Yeah. 2:11.
and you mentioned like rewriting it over and over like throughout the class. Like, do you remember some of the notes that you'd gotten like to elevate and get better?
So I was I think I was reined in a lot for this sketch. The initial pass, I had to like face off with the devil or something, and it just got like, it was like super super weird, which kind of now that I'm out of that Second City thing, that's kind of where my sketches land most of the time now. But I mean, it was a good exercise. It basically got pulled to like more and more mundane, manageable kind of non-super things, which I understand like functionally how that sketch works. Cause it's not like written in there, but like my costume there, like the blazer was blue and I had like red boots on and I was like, I looked like a superhero. Yeah. So like that was kind of in it. But I wasn't really doing any superhero stuff. I was just kind of existing.
Pointing to the CN Tower and...
Yeah. Just like normal stuff. And like, I understand functionally how that works. But yeah, it was a bit weirder when I started it.
I wonder if that's like a hallmark of the Second City process of like, yeah, don't be too weird, right? Like just, you know, keep it grounded, keep it in real life.
Yeah, I mean, they're teaching people to do their style of comedy, which, you know, has been the staple for whatever. And it really depends on what teacher and director you have. But when I got out of that program, I just didn't feel funny anymore.
It took a while to
build that up in me again. So
why do you think that is?
I don't know. I was pitching really weird dark shit. It was
too dark. So you just didn't fit within that Second City model?
Maybe I was young. I mean, I was like not that long ago. I don't know. I went in there thinking more of like, this is something for me to like learn, which, you know, you think in a school. What I learned is that if you don't write yourself into the sketch, you won't get on stage.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was coming there from like children's theater, like friendship, love circle. And I was just like, anybody can do these parts. Let's have fun and play. And then I was like, then I was kind of lighter on stage for my like grad thing. But yeah.
And I think it must like it must be weird to like, you know, you're taking this class, you're taking this conservatory, knowing that there's a show at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Cast by the people in this room. And I'm assuming there's only like what, 10 in
the like
class?
Yeah, 12.
So you have to figure out like, first off, you have to write something funny.
Yeah.
And then figure out who of these randos I just met 6 weeks ago or however long might work best in these parts. Like,
yeah. And I'm just like, I come from a place of just like really trusting actors and being like, I think you could do this. Go for it. You know? And I still think that there's a lot of value in that, and like trying stuff. But yeah, there's kind of a mix where if you write something specifically for a person, they're going to, you know, bring it because you wrote it for this person and their mentalities and their kind of strengths and stuff. So yeah, that's kind of what I learned.
Okay. So you moved to Toronto for like other life stuff, or did you move just like solely to do Second City to start?
No, I moved because like I'm an actor and an AD in film and TV, and my partner at the time, the film industry in Newfoundland is very seasonal, so it kind of starts May, June and runs till the fall or the summer, because or the fall or like Christmas.
So you only have like 7 months to do that. Yeah,
so my partner at the time, he would spend his winters in Toronto working.
Okay.
Come out to Newfoundland for the season. But we were doing long distance for a while. So I did, there's a sketch people in Newfoundland, Almost Famous. I was in the first one, they've had three. And Andrew, who was one of the guys running that, is actually the director of Pinnell Sketchfest. We went to school together at Grenfell. I'm spinning off in the direction. There's a point to this. But I did Almost Famous.
We're gonna come back to Almost Famous. Don't worry about it.
And then that was January of 2017. And then as soon as I was done, I moved to Toronto. But I still had my apartment, and I got in St. John's, and I had a subletter there because it was like really, really cheap. And I moved to Toronto so I could like be with my partner and also have a go at Toronto and the film industry and stuff. So that's when I got in a writer's class at Second City and then auditioned. And I didn't even know if I was going to stay there for a while, like it was a trial. And then a friend of mine was doing a fringe show, and she asked me to audition for it because it was like Newfoundland based. And then I got into Fringe and I was like, well, I guess I'm here until July. And then, I wasn't sure. I think I was just like during the program, I wasn't sure how long I was going to stay in it. Like if I'd have to bail and move home, like that was kind of at me the whole time, so that might have been some of the stress. But through being a student, I got a job as a stage manager at Second City, and that was really great because I was like a comedy tech and I would watch all the other stuff and like the student shows and stuff, so that was a really great experience. And I think that's kind of one of the best things I got out of that program, was just being in the scene. And then my class would go do shows, and then I'd be like, oh, hi, I exist. And that was kind of, that improv community kind of like brought me into the Toronto community, which was fun.
Were you doing things at other spaces other than Second City for like improv? Like, were you going to... I'm blanking all the names of the places in Toronto.
There's Bad Dog and SoCal.
That's the one. I knew there was something dog. I couldn't remember what the adjective was.
Yeah, I took, because I was a staff eventually at Second City, I had like discounts there. So I kind of just kept taking classes there because I could afford to do that. But I would play any sort of jam that was like available to me. And that's kind of how I got reps in. Yeah. And then the pandemic happened and I drove east with no plan. So I'm back here.
So you were in Toronto for a few years then?
Yeah. 2017 to 2020, I guess.
Okay, so you were there.
Yeah.
Okay. So it wasn't just like that, like seasonal, like, oh, I'm going to be there for a few months and then come back and work again in Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. And like,
yeah,
you were there longer than I thought at first. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I was stage managing and I was like, kind of climbing that kind of ladder there. And I was stage managing like, some of the FAMCO shows and like some of the, yeah, just like children's, improv, different kind of things. And then the ship started stopping because of the pandemic and it was Sketchfest 2020.
I was there. I was in Toronto when all of it was happening. Like, I flew home and the world shut down immediately after I got off the plane.
Yeah.
And that was a just, weird weekend.
There was no work. And I was in a tiny junior one bedroom apartment in Toronto. And Toronto's not a fun place. I mean, most places aren't a fun place if you can't leave your house and there's nothing to do. So yeah. And then I drove east and then got back here.
Like, so, all right, so let's talk about like the pre-Toronto adult time. So you get your BFA in theater.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming you're doing like, and I always say it this way, like the quote unquote, like legitimate theater more than comedy, like growing up, like.
I'm somebody who wants to say skit all the time. I don't believe in legitimate or illegitimate theater.
But like, I'm saying like you're doing more plays and like musicals.
Not so much musicals, but I was doing plays. I did some summer rep stuff around Newfoundland. There's actually a lot of summer rep theater in Newfoundland. It's really great for that, like theater festivals and stuff. So I was doing some of that, but honestly, I did theater school and then I moved to St. John's and all my experience was in theater and I didn't have any film experience. So I started like PAing, like volunteer production assistant work. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up doing a lot of that for like 10 years and became an AD and tried to act here and there for a while. But I basically quit that, did Almost Famous, and then moved to Toronto to try and do comedy. I'm not that anymore.
So you're you're pretty much working steadily like as an AD like on film sets there in Newfoundland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you say you quit that? Like,
yeah, to, I mean, I've quit a few times.
Back to acting and like to get back to the first love, I suppose. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I think for a while I thought that I had to choose one or the other, and now I've kind of softened on that. And I just take contracts and do things that I like and do comedy until I run out of money and then do another contract. And between ADing and film and stage managing and acting in film or doing sketch comedy. And I started doing stand-up recently. And it's just, it's all fun.
So, all right, Almost Famous. How do you mm-hmm. get, because I've talked to a couple of people, you know, in that Newfoundland, Labrador. That's one province, right? Like that's, they're connected as one province.
Newfoundland and Labrador. Yeah. Okay. It's one province. One's an island, one's next to it.
So weird.
A little half hour time zone.
Even weirder. So I've talked to people that have been involved with the Almost Famous before. So tell me, how did you get involved with Almost Famous?
I went to school with Andrew and Stu, who are the half handsome guys. It was actually really nice because Andrew reached out to me to write and be in it. And I was mostly doing film crew stuff at that time. So it was just really nice that he reach out to me. And then Yeah, we did this job. It was really fun.
And you had written a sketch and you had sent it to me.
Yeah.
And we went with Blazer Lady partially because there are so many people on stage at the same time in the other sketch. And I keep forgetting to tell people that it's just the two of us. So maybe not. Let's pick the one with the fewest characters.
And I also don't, because I co-wrote that sketch. It's called The Cabbage Rolls. And I think Andra actually pitched that idea to me and Arne Smith, who is way more musical than I am. So he mostly wrote the music.
And that was the other thing. There was singing involved. And I have sung on this podcast way too many times in the last few episodes. So I was like, yeah, let's not.
Yeah. So it was.
Let's not have me awful singing.
And Evan Mercer was the other Canadian Screen Award nominee. Evan Mercer was the other guy in that. And that was really fun for me. And I can see why Andrew put me in there with those guys, because I have a lot of children's theater kind of experience. So that had high kids theater energy. It's basically making fun of the Wiggles, if anybody's was listening, except specifically Newfoundland stuff, so it's cabbage rolls. It was fun. I don't know, it was just a really fun experience. And then I did the Second City program after, and I kind of, part of me felt like I was kind of going backwards, because I've already done a sketch show.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know if this is the same in a lot of major comedy centers or whatever, and I don't know if this is just internalized for me. But I definitely felt when I got to Toronto that everything I did outside of it just did not matter at all.
No, I think that's a fair assessment, especially because I have people that came through the ranks of Philadelphia, did all the levels at our improv theater here. They moved to LA and they basically feel like they have to start over. And going from the Philly Improv Theater here to going to UCB or whatever out there, starting at step one again, they feel a little I've done this for 7 years already. I don't want to pay you another two grand to go through this again.
Yeah. No, I get that for sure. But it's your experience outside the city, you still have it, no matter what anybody else is saying to you, you've still built those skills and stuff, and that will be apparent when you start playing with people, and it'll be apparent to see that you have experience doing that. But it's just really easy to feel nothing else I've ever done before here matters, but it does.
Anybody? Yeah, it does. it's all part of it. All right, so you mentioned living in Toronto and going through more things with Second City, working behind the scenes there, improving that, and then the pandemic happens. You drive east to go back to St. John's, or right, St. John's?
Yeah.
So how are you dealing with the pandemic and comedy happening?
It was so I got the government subsidy or whatever from Canada. Thank you, Canada, for CERB. So when I was getting paid to do nothing, what I did was Zoom prov, basically, and other online sort of things. And I know some people didn't love that, but it was just a whole new way of storytelling and improv and stuff. And I got to end up at Sketch Train with you and still be involved in Toronto Sketch Fest and stuff while I was in Newfoundland. And I started playing with a bunch of people based in New York and Atlanta and LA and the UK, and just kind of realizing that we're all improv nerds and we're all doing the same thing. And it was just I found this whole community during the pandemic that really kind of helped me get through it, because it was a traumatic experience for the whole world. People are still dealing with it, but that was a nice thing that came out of it.
Yeah, I think I don't think I'd ever want to see a Zoomed improv or sketch show ever again. But I'm happy that we adapted it for that time. Like, and that, like, you know, there were communities that were built.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, because we did a sketch comedy open mic, you know, like Sketchy Bader for 4 years on Zoom until it became just me and like two other people hanging out on a late Friday night. And I was like, you know, we probably don't need this anymore. We can, I'll bring it back every once in a while. But yeah. So, all right. So what are you like now? And if I remember correctly, when I talked to members of Mom's Girls, because of, you know, how far east you were and the whole island nature of Labrador, stuff was happening pretty like opening up quicker than a lot of other places, because you basically just, you know, self-contained lockdown and didn't let anybody in.
Yeah. So actually, there's a few TV shows that shoot out there, and Hudson and Rex is one. And it's a dog that self-scribes. And it was one of the first to start shooting.
There's a Canadian TV show.
Canadian TV.
Is it for children or is it
a German show? It's a procedural.
It's like for adults. It's a dog. Like, to watch.
For families. Yeah. It's called Hudson and Rex. You can probably find it in the States somewhere. I'm just not sure. So Newfoundland was shut down, and my partner at the time, we drove east because our families were in Nova Scotia, and they had the Atlantic bubble, which basically was you need to quarantine for 2 weeks if you want to be anywhere in Atlantic Canada before you can move around. So we really wanted to be closer to our families when that was happening. But then like once you quarantine, then you could move freely around the four provinces. Except Newfoundland was super shut down. You needed a special slip or something. So, me and my partner were sending, self-tapes to try and get a day play role on the, because for some reason film was an essential service at this time. So we got, he ended up getting cast as a hiker. And then had his like contract or deal memo with him. And that's how we got into Newfoundland. Then we just never left. Cause we weren't actually from there. But, but I started, doing film work again because, it was happening. Like, I think Hudson and Rex was one of the first, in the country that started up again because, of the really low because numbers.
Dogs can't get COVID. And,
dogs can't get COVID.
Like, yes, I guess. I can.
But it's really interesting. Like, I'm a nerd. I'm an AD nerd, and my friend's an AD on that show. So the first few episodes, they just wrote it. So it was all outside. Yeah. And there weren't a lot of background people. And it was like creatively kind of dealing with COVID. Yeah. But yeah, there was work. I stayed here as long as there was work, and there was work.
It's interesting to see, like, how we all, like, Hollywood or, you know, like, the Canadian film industry or everything, like, how they adapt it to COVID, like, where you would have, like, scenes, like, in cafes, like, yeah, we're not going to do a cafe, we're going to do just walking down the street instead, like,
yeah,
it's going to be an absolutely desolate street with no one around, but, you know, it's fine, it's still a major city, just two people, though. All right, so tell me about NL Sketchfest and what's going on with this.
I'm really excited. It's our first festival. There's a few people from away coming. It's April 3rd to 7th. I'm festival coordinating, so I should be able to tell you guys more things about it. I'm doing a solo bit, and I pitched it as some weird bagpipe sketches, which is how I learned to make sure I get myself on stage, write a bagpipe sketch, because I don't know a lot of other bagpiping comedians.
Do you play bagpipes?
Yeah. Cape Breton is very Scottish. I should have started with that. But so I just started writing bagpipe sketches and bagpipe comedy. It's a podcast, so you can't see Josh's face right now. It's amazing.
I don't think those are two words I've ever put together, like, of possibilities of, like, two words that would go together, bagpipe comedy. Have even more
FOMO.
The whole
market of trying to corner.
Now I have even more FOMO by not coming up there. Like, I'm slightly, like, looking down, being a little rude and checking the list of people that I know that have done, you know, from other Sketchfests and stuff. But, like, my buds in Bad Medicine are going up. Big Chick Energy, Cam Wiley. Like, I've talked to a couple of Cheetahs.
Yeah. Like, I'm very excited that, like, people are actually coming, because we don't have, it's our first year, so we don't have a lot of money to, like, do anything. But I'm very excited that people are coming and playing, and yeah.
It's so cool, like, because, like, I think I even said it to, the people from Mom's Girls, like, all I know about Newfoundland is from Come From Away. Like, any knowledge I have of that province is from that Broadway show. Like, and that's it. Like, so I'm happy that, like, there's a space that I don't know very well doing more comedy, because everyone needs more comedy. So.
Yeah. I also think it's, I have a bit of a different perspective, because I'm not from Newfoundland, but it's been my home for the last 10 years. I came here for school and went to Toronto for a bit, and the whole pandemic brought me back. But it's very similar to Cape Breton, and I don't know, maybe other Atlantic places, but comedy is kind of a coping mechanism, I think, there's a history of kind of, you know, the fisheries kind of dying, and from where I'm from, it was like a big mining community, and people didn't really have a lot of money, and that shut down, and the steel plant, and, like, it's just like storytelling and comedy and kind of some self-deprecating humor that you don't necessarily see in other places. It's like comedy is a way to, like, deal with kind of not great circumstances. I think that's, like, where a lot of the kind of roots of comedy in Atlantic Canada.
Well, yeah, like, you even saying about the whole, like, was it skit songs and stories? Like,
yeah.
Getting together and just entertaining each other, like, that way, for sure.
Yeah.
So you kind of brought it up, but, like, growing up in Nova Scotia, again, another thing I have no idea about. Like, if you gave me a map of Canada, I could kind of figure things out, like, but I am kind of dumb American in that kind of sort. All right, growing up in Nova Scotia, going to school in Newfoundland, and then moving to Toronto for a spell, have you noticed differences, like, within the comedy worlds of those three, like, specific places?
Oh, for sure. I do find Newfoundland and Nova Scotia very, very similar. And I think that's why I kind of made my way in here. But I did, and maybe it's just, like, particular teachers but I had a similar conversation with a comedian from New Brunswick about, like, I was pitching a lot of kind of making fun of Toronto bits and stuff, and people were just, like, not having it. Like, no, we don't do that. And I was like, okay. I mean, to be fair, maybe it was a really bad pitch, but I just found that, like, yeah, there's something just about kind of making fun of where you're from or what stuff that they're doing that's just kind of part of coping. And it's like kind of built into the DNA of some of our comedy out here. Yeah. I think that might.
I wonder if that's a thing for me too, because, like, I guess I'd get a little defensive if people make fun of Philadelphia, like, Because there's certain, like, especially with, like, Philadelphia sports, there's, like, tropes of, like, how awful Philadelphia fans are and, like, throwing snowballs at Santa Claus and or D batteries or whatever other stupid stuff people have done in the past. Like, I'm just so tired of, like, that narrative. I'm like, yeah, that Santa thing was 60 years ago. Like, yeah. We've done other awful stuff after that. Like, come on.
But that, like, that's your angle. The other awful like, stuff. But. Yeah, I mean, there's a way to do this with care, to like kind of make fun of yourselves in like a way of how we can do better. You know, it's just like you're not punching down,
right? And that whole outsider honestly. Thing, like you haven't been in Toronto long enough to make fun of us yet. Like,
no, sure, 100%.
What like, I ask most of the Canadians I talk to, and I'm really curious about this Hudson and Rex show. I'm gonna look it up when we're done. But do you have like something that's specifically Canadian that you would recommend an American to go look for?
If you haven't seen any Baroness von sketches, I would look those up. There's a great one. There's a lot of great ones, but there's one that I think about every time I use dry shampoo. And I think it's just called dry shampoo.
I think, I forget, they were on like IFC down here in America. And I think I subscribed to that one streaming service just for Baroness, but then I wasn't watching it enough, so I was like, I'm paying $10 a month to want to watch Baroness, and I'm being lazy and not doing it. Like, I need to figure out a better way of doing this, and like maybe just pay the $10 for the month and just like binge through and just go for it.
Yeah, I think a lot of their stuff is on YouTube too. I don't know all the American distribution things.
Right. So, I shouldn't expect you to. Yeah. Baroness Vince. Oh, it's not anything anymore. Okay. So at least legally. Well, I'll do sketch by sketch on YouTube. And then with sketch comedy, also like I'm always curious. Saturday Night Live is like the big like sketch comedy televised thing forever. Do you have a favorite SNL cast member of all time?
The of all time makes me really nervous, but Kate McKinnon, anything that she does.
Why does it make you nervous?
No, it just makes me nervous to have to pick one person.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's say all. She's a powerhouse and she's generally a correct answer. Like,
yeah, no, that's what, like, yeah, she's, I think she's, yeah, I think she's my favorite, but then I'm like, I'm worried about like the what are the other ones I'm supposed to say?
No, that's I've always said that there's very few wrong answers to that question, and I will tell you when you pick a wrong answer. Like,
okay,
Robert Downey Jr. is a wrong answer. Like, he was there for a year and it wasn't a good year.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, Canadian, I'm gonna ask, like, do you have a favorite Kids in the Hall or Second City SCTV member?
I don't know. I still remember the I'm in the middle of a big bike race sketch from like the old Kids in the Hall. I feel like I watched that a lot, and the kind of head smushing thing.
I always like ask about Kids in the Hall too, but like I haven't seen everything of theirs, you know, of the original show, because I watched it on vacation once and my mom did not like the chicken lady. So she banned me from watching it. And I didn't know why she was banning me from watching it until I watched it like 5 years later. I was like, oh, okay. Mm. Yeah, I get it. I was too young for this completely. Like, you know, lesson learned. I'll get back to it. I had this thought as I was like coming home from work today about like the idea, because I haven't been performing and writing as much as I probably want to. Mm. I've been producing and being behind the scenes more the last couple of years, especially, you know, post pandemic and everything. So how do you feel about the balance of behind the scenes versus actually performing? Like, for you personally, like, because someone needs to produce the show, someone needs to stage manage and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
But well, then, like, do you have that, like, that real pull of, like, I need to get back on stage, like, now, kind of thing?
Yeah, I try to feed both beasts, you know what I mean? If I'm misperforming, but also I feel like there's a lot of people that say you have to pick one or do one or the other, and I feel like I listened to them for a while, but like I'm festival coordinating Sketchfest, and I also have 30 minutes, and I'm also helping helping some friends in their like new voices kind of sketch time. And if you're determined, you can do it. And also, like, I find producing improv a lot easier because then it's just kind of playtime on the stage. So I don't actually have to learn words for it. But so that's like your little reward. Yeah. I don't know. Just know when it's time to do the other thing. And you have to kind of carve out your own creative time. And that can be a hard thing to do, especially if you're making your money sometimes producing or helping other projects or whatever. Just you have to actually carve out time for your own creative work. And also don't beat yourself up if you aren't feeling creative after you've produced like a whole bunch of stuff, because you also need to rest too, because you're not a robot, you know?
Yeah, I've had a couple of our friends here, like in Philly, work in creative fields, like whether it's like marketing or whatever. And then they feel like they come home and they're like, oh, I can't, like, I don't want to write something. I've been writing even though it wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there's a part of me that I'm like my real life is being a manager in a drugstore. And like, so there's no creative at all. It's, you know, just dealing with people all day and stuff. Like, so when I do the free time, I don't have that like, ugh, like energy being zapped for me, like kind of thing. Do you ever have that like issue of I've been, you know, working in this creative field, you know, as my 9-to-5 job, or I mean, you're ADing, so it's not 9-to-5. It's definitely longer than that. Like to come home and still want to do something creative for yourself.
Yeah, well, you have to kind of gauge your time. Like I was second ADing on a show. So that's kind of 8 hours a week or whatever. But I took like an online acting class on Saturdays because sometimes if stuff changes, you might have to make a new call sheet, but you usually won't have to do that on a Saturday. You do that on the Sunday. So then for the 3 hours on Saturday, that was, I could do my little acting thing. And I've noticed the more that I follow, like doing the creative thing, just kind of for my mental health, the actually better benefits I've reaped professionally, just because I have those reps and that kind of practice. But I wouldn't be working 14 hours and then going home and trying to write something.
Right.
Because then I just couldn't, like personally, I couldn't do that. But yeah, kind of just kind of gauge your capacity and kind of don't beat yourself up if you can't write anything after you work a full week of something. Just kind of figure out how you can do a little bit of creative stuff. Because I know during the pandemic, I kept trying to like write a series or something and just like nothing was happening. And I even took a writing class and just like I couldn't do any of it. So that's when I started just doing improv, because you just like show up and use those creative muscles, but you don't really have to be preparing for anything. So it was like a reset for me.
Yeah, that whole idea that like improv, you get to go and play and learn, but doing like a sketch class or a sketch show, like there's homework, there's like a lot of work beforehand that I think people take a sketch class and they don't realize that there's going to be homework.
Yeah.
Just, and who wants homework as an adult?
Yeah. Just gauge your capacity. Cause if you don't actually have it, then you're just going to beat yourself up for not being able to get your homework done or like, you know, yeah, I don't know. There's no clear answer for any of this. No, there isn't.
But I like people's perspectives. You've dropped a bit of knowledge that I think is very good, like a little bit of nuggets of goodness throughout this. But I ask everybody as we wind down here, do you have a piece of advice that you would give to someone who's just starting out sketch comedy? Or skit comedy, if you want to be you about it.
People are getting mad at me if they hear this answer. If you're just starting out, yeah, write to what you find funny, like what you specifically find hilarious, because you're not gonna be everybody's flavor. Like, I do weird clown bagpipe sketches. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but I'm having a really good time, and some people are gonna really dig it. So not everybody's gonna love what you do. But just follow your fun and surround yourself with people smarter than you and more experienced, but also really dig into what you find funny, because that's going to motivate you to keep doing it if it's fun and funny for you.
Yeah. And then finally, I mean, you have a BFA in theater. You've been doing theater since you were, you know, a wee tyke. But then you has also have all this other experience behind the scenes, you know, like doing like the unsung like grunt work that makes everything possible. But why has comedy become such a big part of your life?
I don't know if it's like become a big part of my life. Like it's kind of just always been. I do think it is a coping mechanism, and that is something that I can work with counselors and stuff. But I do, yeah, it's just, it makes your day better to be able to laugh, a very basic sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've said it before, and it's one of those things I always say, like, I don't understand the people that don't like comedy or like prefer, like there's this weird thing in America that feels like when you hit a certain age, you enjoy watching like Law and Order SVU and CSI, NCIS, all those like crime drama procedurals. And I'm just like, why do you want to live in this world of all the awfulness that could possibly happen crime wise when something funny is on the other channel, like someone trying to make you laugh and make you happy? Like, come on.
I think you can do both. I mean,
but like, there are people that only, like, I'm saying, like, not the both thing. There's a lot of people that do, like, oh, CSI is on this channel for 8 hours. Yeah. That's my day. Like, that sounds awful to me.
Yeah. I think everybody's got their own thing. I like, it's all storytelling to me. And it's just like, I don't really see a difference beyond the like sandbox that you play in for these specific things, you know, like you just, all the tools you get from like a theater and like kids theater and Shakespeare and sketch and stand up and improv, like you just jumble them around and put them in the sketch box and play with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. they're all tools to play with. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jana.
Thanks.
NL Sketchfest runs at the Hub in St. John's, Newfoundland and Labrador from April 3rd through April 7th. Follow them on Instagram at NL Sketchfest. Jenna will be performing on Sunday, April 7th in the 7 p.m. block along with Four Idiots. Cutthroat Sketch returns to Salbona Thursday, April 4th with the theme Ring by Spring. Tickets are $12 and available at cutthroatsketch.com/tickets. And just a reminder, Philly Sketchfest returns in all of its glory, May 31st through June 8th. It's going to be a great time, I promise. My First Sketch is a Philly Sketchfest production. You can find out more information at phillysketchfest.com. Follow Philly Sketchfest on Instagram at Philly Sketchfest. The music on this episode is by the band No-No, which you can check out at nonoband.bandcamp.com. Like My First Sketch on Facebook, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This is Josh Hyam. Thanks for listening. Go see some comedy. And rest easy, Joe Flaherty.